Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowering. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at the Richmond Cafe and have lunch with today's folks. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we are talking with Milo Russell. Milo has taught at VCU for over 40 years in painting and printmaking, and retired a few years ago. And this is just sort of a fascinating journey through his life and the adventures that he has had.
So you taught painting at VCU. Was that your primary job for a long time?
For a long time.
Really?
I had maybe 30 jobs in my lifetime.
Did you really?
Maybe more, yeah.
Really? 30?
Everything from bus ticket salesman to hotel desk clerk.
Right.
To graphic artist, to window display artist, you know, you name it. I came down here with $10 in my pocket.
Where'd you come from?
Up in Boston.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What brought you here?
And I had a woman who was a very pretty lady. She came up north, and I was already working in a hotel up north, and I saw her, and she saw me, and I was playing this music, which I love, classical music, and listening to John Gielgud and John Barrymore, and, you know, the different poems there, and she, who's playing that beautiful music? So one of the waiters said, "Oh, that's Russell. He's, you know, works in the front office." So she wanted to meet me. So
great.
She met me, and we started having, you know, drinking a lot and talking and whatever. And I came down. She wrote me a letter up north, and so now I came down. I sold everything I had for about $40 and then came down. So through YMCA.
When you came down, you mean like as in Richmond, as in Chester, as in?
I came down as in nothing, with a little suitcase, two pairs of socks, one change of underwear. I think, yeah.
But what did you come to, Richmond, Chester?
I came back to Petersburg.
To Petersburg, okay. What year was this?
Wait, what?
What year was this?
Oh, God, I don't know. I was married 46 years, probably about 55 years ago.
Right.
Years ago. She taught school, eventually, over here for quite a while. But, so I went to the YMCA. I was $3 a week. And I figured I had $7 left over. So Monday morning, I get up real early, and I went down the middle to Paulheimer's. I said, "I'm a window decorator, you know," and they hired me. And I really wasn't the window decorator at all. They hired me. They didn't even ask where did I work or anything. So I worked around helping somebody. That's basically what I did.
Right.
So all of a sudden, one day, they called on me to do something all by myself. And I tried to work it out with some stuff I was trying to buy. I couldn't get it done in time. Guys, well, improvise. You're damn sure you have to improvise. You know? So I didn't know what to do, so I said, "Oh, I quit. So I know there's a big store right across the way called Millen Road. I said, "Well, there's another place." So I go over there, and they call up Tallheimer. The guy said, "Well, he's a good worker, but he doesn't take anything on to himself in terms of doing anything. You know, he just helps, you know." So anyway, the guy said he hired me as an artist to do artwork for the windows.
Oh, great.
And so he hired me, you know, the salaries weren't big, but he hired me, and I worked there for about 2 years. And then hard times came, and they laid off people. I was the last one hired. None of them were living. Yeah. But anyhow, they went from one job to the other. I worked at Fort Lee, graphic arts down there, doing these stupid drawings and, you know, how to cut off a picture or whatever it was. And I took that for as long as I could. And my wife said, "Why don't you just stay home and paint? Now, we have nobody else to, you know, I'll support." I said, "No way, I can't do that. You know,
right.
I have a job." So I kept on going, and I got a job at Reynolds Metals as an artist who sprayed and mixed colors. And then I got back in the Millen Road for a while. And finally, my wife said, "You're always so unhappy. What would you like to do? Why don't you go back to school?" I said, I dropped out of high school. I can't go back. She said, "Yeah, you can take that test, you know." So I took the test, I passed the test, and I went back. And I was like about 30 years old.
Really?
Yeah. And Teresa and I got along great.
So this is Teresa Pollock.
Yeah.
Is this when you met Teresa Pollock?
I used
to
walk her home at night, you know, after class. I had a class eventually at nighttime that I taught until 12:30 in the morning before I got home.
Really?
Oh, yeah. A little house that they tore down over there, a big house up now, but that was where we were staying, in the upper flat. And anyway, I had to walk down about a couple of miles down the road off from the bus. But anyway, it was the only way I could do it. The sculpture got out at the 9:45. The bus left downtown from the trailways, you know, about 9:15, so there's no way to catch it.
Right.
So I had to go down there and wait till about 12:15. But she got me in Chester about maybe 1 o'clock, 1:30, and my wife would always stay up worried, you know, until I got home. And I did that for a long time. She caught rides for me occasionally. I was maybe about 50 when I learned to drive a car.
Really? I was going to say, why didn't you drive?
I despise cars.
Do you?
I hate cars.
Yeah.
I hate anything like the car. I like to walk.
Yeah.
But now I'm a lazy. I've gotten out. I don't jump out of the tub anymore. It's a battle getting in and out of the tub. And I wouldn't have ever believed it.
Yeah.
I've walked as much as 42, 50 miles in my lifetime on the road. I have nothing to walk and walk and walk.
Well, we were talking a little bit about the depression and what you did during that time.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? Were you able to do?
12,
were you able
I was
to paint
years
then?
Old, 12 you were, years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's a long story, but I never lived with my father and mother. My grandmother brought me up.
No.
And so later on, when the depression hit, my father decided. My mother became pregnant at this later age. He wanted to get a home for the two of us. So I came from Canada up in Canada. I came down. Down up north and into Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Right.
And they were Italians. My father was Italian, both sides of the family. And his father had died, but his mother was still there, and his stepfather was there. And so we stayed with them for about a year. My father ran out of insurance money, took out his insurance. He went to work at a WPA, $12 a week.
Wow.
I worked in the summers for $1 a day. Picking fruit and stuff, whatever the hell was going on in the vegetable garden.
Right.
And 10 cents was so important. I walked several miles to the job. I wouldn't spend 10 cents for the bus fare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10 cents was a big deal.
Was it? Yeah.
Really a big deal.
Yeah.
To get a dime. So that was what happened. And so I went to school. They put me back a year because I came from Canada and I didn't know United States history, which is true. I did. I knew more about the kings and the queens than I did about that. And so then I went to school. Took a general course because there was no money to go to college, so that I signed for the general course. And I passed the first, second, and third year, getting worse and worse. And by the fourth year, I had it. I couldn't take it anymore. I just left.
Right.
So I joined a CCC camp.
What's that?
Civilian Conservation Corps.
Ah, okay. So you got to work outdoors.
And I got to work dig ditches in Pueblo, Colorado. And then they put me shoveling sand down at the back of a truck, chewing it up. So after about 2 or 3 weeks, I said, the hell with this, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
I'm getting out of here. So I packed my clothes in a little that belonged to the government, the stuff that belonged to them, the little put on my bed. I took off with just the clothes, had pants and a little suit jacket, so all I had on.
Really?
And I took off, put some little chocolate bars in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And so I slept behind a billboard the first night on the outskirts of Pueblo. And then I took off, and the first step I did was 42 miles going to Colorado Springs from Pueblo. That's exactly what big signs had told you. And I did that on no breakfast.
You did that in one day? 42 miles in one day?
42 miles, exactly.
That's moving.
And I went there and went to Salvation Army for supper.
Uh-huh.
Had a good supper there. And then I came back for another meal. They told me not to come back anymore. They want you to eat one meal, but you're not supposed to hang around and make a living off of it. So anyway, I took off, and I went everywhere, back and forth. I rode freight trains. I rode passenger trains, which is a federal offense because
right.
It carries mail. And the other guy and I grabbed one. I mean, one of the really fast ones, picks up the water on the fly.
Right.
And I rode that. And I worked in a camp. Where a guy came down to the railroad station, got us, put us in the truck, and you had to cut in the water little palms and stuff, everything that went so the ducks could land. They had to have a place for the ducks to land with all the
ice.
I did that for a couple of weeks, yeah.
Really?
Down in Imperial Valley. Oh, yeah. I just had, just one place after another, but you had to keep going because people who, and that they were poor, had no place to go. You had to move. The main thing you lived on, peanut butter sandwich and an apple.
Really?
A banana was a rarity. A banana was a real rare thing. I never had a cold or a toothache or anything in my life. Obviously, I didn't brush my teeth for right. over 2 years.
Right.
I probably wore the same underwear for about 3 years.
Right.
And when you got picked up by the police, which was about every time you went through a town, they got you.
Right.
And they checked you out to see if you were okay. And they always usually found you were okay. But they would say, 30, you're guilty? Not guilty. 30 days. You serve about one day, and then they kick you out. Or keep going. Don't come back. You know what I mean? And just a way, I'm getting you out of town because you're...
Right, just move you along because you're just going to be a drain. So how did you get from all of that to being able to paint?
At VCU? When I was 12 years old, I drew when I was about 4 or 5 all the time. I didn't have money for any paints or even know much about it. But the thing that struck me about painting, the teacher in the school up in Canada hung up two things, not the two greatest paintings in the world, but right. They were two things I liked. The third, Millay's Angelus and the Gleaners.
Mm-hmm.
And put these prints on the wall. I thought they were real things. I mean, I didn't know the difference between reproduction.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And they attracted, I used to spend hours going and looking at those things on the wall.
Really?
They're fascinating. Or making the little Valentines of Valentine's Day, the little things, you know, anything like that. Fascinated me. So I always, you know, that one of the angels all being, everybody being slaughtered there, that print, that famous print. My grandmother had that, which fascinated me. It was a woodcut. And it was going to hell, you know, all the people were thrusted to hell.
Was it?
Yeah,
by
Bosch.
By Bosch?
Yeah.
By Hieronymus Bosch?
Yeah. But there, up there, I lived in a little town, a little one-horse town or half-a-horse town. You know, it was a farming place. And the library and school consisted of one little case where the teacher would unlock it. If you had done all your work well, then she'd let you, you know, go get a book out of there and lock it back up again. And I read every book I could find in there. And I loved to look
at it. So that was the library? Was one little case?
That was the school. Belonged to the school. Really? There was no library in the town.
Really?
No library in the town, no. No policemen.
So did you keep making work while you were during?
Oh yeah. So you were not on the road. Not on the road. No.
But when you got off the road, how did that happen?
Well, the way it happened, the final thing was I was in Albany, New York. It was the last time I jumped on the train. Anyway, it was winter time, and I was coming back to Boston, and it was snow on top of you couldn't get in the car. They're all get up. So this guy and I got on top of it. The coal up there. And so the guy came along, the railroad bull, as they call him.
Yeah.
He saw us up there. He said, well, if you want to go somewhere that bad, I'm not going to bother you. You know? So we sat up there and you know, got in, went to the next place. And then I went home for about a day or two, and that's about all I could stand, and I was off again. I never related to my parents at all.
Really?
They just were like a zero in my life. But for whatever reason, my father was a nurse.
Really? Your father was a nurse?
I don't know.
Wow.
But way back in
way
in,
back
in,
then,
in
the, yeah.
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 But I only lived with him about 2 years of my life, the whole life.
Wow.
My brother I only saw a few times. He died about 2 or 3 years ago. He was a psychoneurotic, whatever. I mean, paranoid. Yeah, he had paranoid. They had to lock him up finally. He just healed. He'd take anything.
Yeah.
So I come from a good background.
Good background for an artist. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Milo Russell, who's been involved as a teacher of painting and sculpture and printmaking at VCU for over 40 years. He's retired now, and we're just sort of reminiscing about his life. Sort of fascinating because a lot of it was his early life was going through times like some of us may be facing now. Now let's get back to our interview. I keep trying to bring you back to the painting, to when you really started doing painting.
Well,
was it
when you
met Teresa Pollock?
Yeah, when I was adopted, but not formally, but just kind of church home.
Formally, when you started.
And in Quincy, Massachusetts. And I did a lot of drawing, especially there. I'd already painted, you know, a little bit before that. And the way I painted, my mother was hit by a car, and she wasn't hurt. Mm-hmm. But the insurance people came running down. They said they'd give her $100 if she would sign it. She was glad to sign it. $100 seemed like a fortune to her.
Right.
So she gave me $10 to go downtown and get myself my paints. So I went down there, and I bought, you know, some colors and I bought a little piece of canvas on cardboard like you get and a couple of brushes. I came back. You know, that was the first painting I ever did. And I did a painting of a churchyard all in wintertime with some tombstones all over the place.
Really?
That was my first, yeah. First
you still have the painting?
And then, huh?
Do you still have the painting?
My brother talked about that painting in one of the last letters he sent to me when he was in the hospital.
Huh.
He still remembered that painting of the tombstones.
Yeah.
But the thing I was going to say, in Quincy, Massachusetts, where I lived in a high-class neighborhood, had a beautiful beach. And I took my little big sketchbook down there. I drew people standing, sitting, whatever they were doing, going in the water. You know, I drew. And that was, you know, what I did for the 2 years that I was there. And then I left that home and went into a home for delinquent boys who had no home.
Really?
Yeah. And I stayed there a couple of years. I'm trying to fit all these things together. When did you do that? I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And the FBI checked on me when I got a job at Fort Lee because I was going to be handling secret material according to what they were saying. I had to draw, you know. And they said it didn't fit. You know, the time things didn't fit in some places. You know, but they accepted me, but it didn't fit. And I imagine not. You know, what did you do? You know, I did so many things.
Yeah, I have the same.
I had so many jobs. You know what I mean? I can't fit them all exactly. Mm-hmm. But painting, I'll leave out the greatest thing. Conic Studios. Did you ever hear Conic Studios, the stained glass people?
No, I don't think
they
so.
They did St. John the Divine, St. Patrick's Cathedral, these big rose windows.
Okay, okay.
And I wanted to get a job there. So Teresa, Miss Brink, she reminds me of Teresa, wrote a little thing about saying I would make the most of anything that, you know, had an opportunity. I still got a letter. And I went over there to Mr. Connick's studio, and he said, what do you know about staying? He's kind of a gruff old guy. What do you know about staying? I said, well, I just love it. I think it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. He said, oh, you go home and design a stained glass window for me. Bring it in Monday morning. Well, that scared the hell out of me. You know? But I went home. I went to the library. I got out a book on stained glass windows. I drew a little, you know, panel. I'll show you before you go one of the ones in there that done by the artist.
Right.
And so I was supposed to be in a prayer. He hired me right away.
Really?
Hired me right away.
Based on the drawing or based on the stained glass?
Based on the thing.
Really?
Based on what I
gave. What you drawing, yeah.
And I worked there for about 3 years. And then I attempted suicide. So that was the end of that thing. I mean, I took an overdose and everybody went crazy. And I collapsed out on the street the next morning. But anyway, that was the end of the career there.
The stained glass.
A 10-year thing.
Apprenticeship?
And,
a 10-year apprenticeship? Or
yeah,
a 10-year, really?
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't making you too happy.
Well, it was a gorgeous place. What happened was I wasn't eating well. With $12 a week, you don't eat well.
Yeah.
You just don't do it.
Yeah.
And I had to buy my paints. I even bought a Van Gogh Starry Night with it, which it took me about a month to get. But anyway, if you don't eat right, when I came down and went to the doctor, I kept falling in a hole. Falling in a hole all the time.
Yeah.
And so he said, you're so low and deficient in vitamins and iron, he's going to give you shots. He didn't wait for vitamins to take a vitamin. So he gave me a shot. I started to feel better.
Really?
Started to feel better.
Yeah.
I thought I had a brain tumor, and I thought I had this. I had several heart attacks when I worked at Mill and Rose. They kept me running off. They called it. You know, all was just tension.
Yeah, stress, anxiety.
Said, God, I'd be, you're trying to get my breath. I couldn't do it. And you're doing a piece of sculpture, and so it's not good, and you want it to be better, and you don't want to disappoint anybody, and it's awful. And then so Randy said, I used to see you there and wonder if you're going to make it through the day, all that
stress.
Yeah.
It was so important to you, though.
Days, they give everybody a little pill. If they had a little, they give a pill. Everybody was taking little things in those days. Doctor, right away, I feel tense, doctor. Yeah, okay.
So how did you end up working with Teresa Pollock?
Well, she as a matter of fact, she grabbed me when I first went there. She was real nice and, told me to talk with. And then from then on in, I took her class all the time because she always put me down. And I loved her class. I loved her. Jewett, I didn't know so well. Jewett Campbell. Mm-hmm. You know Jewett Campbell?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know him as well. So anyway, he said, you study with Jewett. You study with Jewett. Jewett was more, up here. Then Teresa was good with the structure, the classical structure, measuring, and a great discipline.
Was this a basic class? RPI?
Yeah, RPI.
It was RPI, okay. All right.
1950-something, 253, okay. Something like that. I was in there. Mm-hmm. I went to RPI. I got through there in 2 years, and I got through one more year going. I took extra classes from the University of Virginia.
Right.
And so there was a man that came over there to one of the high schools here. Yeah, was a, I can't get the name of the high school. He came down and taught a class. And I took one from him. I went to the University of Richmond, took some more classes. I managed to get through it. But I had to be one semester, I had to be at the University of Virginia. And I didn't like to play. Everybody was all, old star stuff.
Pretty formal. I mean,
coming
pretty,
in there, I couldn't accustom myself to it. But, they were really wearing white shirts and ties when they're doing sculpture. You can imagine it. And, there was basically architecture people, taking class and stuff. But Mr. Smith was there. He was very good in the graphic arts, very good. And I loved him. The guy that taught painting didn't like me at all. He hated me. And so years later, when I was teaching a student came to me one day and said, Mr. Russell, you remember Mr. Barbie? I remember Mr. Barbie. He said, well, I was talking. He asked me who I was studying with at VCU. I told him I was studying with you. He said he wanted to know if the little guy walking under the shadow had disappeared yet or something. You remember little Abner?
Right.
There was a guy in there, a little shadow. Every time he went, the little thing was over his head. So that was the impression this guy had of me. He steered clear of me. Yeah, so I asked Smith, I said, what is wrong with this guy? You know, the way he was acting, he just ignored it. He said he doesn't like RPI. He tried to get a job there. He didn't get one.
Didn't get one, so.
He said, you don't like RPI or anything about RPI. He said, just don't worry about it. He said, you got to grow up a little bit more, but it's all right. Don't worry about it. You know? Smith was
So when did you start? So you got a degree, yeah? And then you started teaching at RPI?
Yeah, right. Mr. Bonds hired me.
What were you teaching?
He hired me. Oh, painting and sculpture.
Oh, really?
Painting, both. Sculpture and drawing.
Really?
It was a great place. It was just a small place. Mr. Bonds hated meetings. Mm-hmm. He despised them. He never wanted more than one meeting was all he wanted. I loved that. By the way, it suited me, you know. Because it's like Bumgarner said one day, he's on almost every committee. He said, I can't think of one thing I ever accomplished, you know, from all the stuff that was going on. One thing that we ever accomplished, really.
Yeah. You know, right.
Talk and talk. And of course, I never said anything. I felt bad not saying it. So Kevorkian, who headed the department one time, said, you're the senior member of the faculty, and you never say anything. You come in, well, that's not right. You're supposed to contribute. I said, I hate the whole damn business. I hate it. I love, you know. So he said, it's not right. And Martin loved the committees. Martin he dreams about being on a committee. You know. You know, so, he'll be on the committee of any kind. I think you were around when who's the other guy head of the department before Roth? You know, who?
Victor Cord.
Yeah. Well, you were around when, yeah. Well, then he gives me, you know, the head of the committee. I don't know. I said, whoa. You know, I'll wash the bathroom. I'll clean the window. I said, oh, my gosh, they put me in charge of having it. You know, so he was real nice. He said, okay, you serve on the committee. I said, okay, I'll serve on the committee. And so I did. And anyway, you're not supposed to say anything that's not backed up by these letters you get about this person. And that's what I did. I was concise and went to the point. I bring it in there. They opened up. No, not enough. No. We gotta expand it more. We got to make it bigger. Got to be bigger and bigger and
you're
bigger.
You're talking about letters of recommendation?
Yeah.
For the students needed? Yeah, and you were concise?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so they gave a paper to somebody else, back to Bernard, and Bernard added, work today, make it feel bigger than what you got. I say,
How about your painting style? What were the influences there for you? Your painting, your style of painting. Who influenced you in terms of your paintings?
I don't know of any one. I looked at a lot of people, you know, and I love a lot of things. I'm not down to a few. You know, I look at Agnes Martin. I can't write about her, but I love her work. I saw it in New York for the first time in the original. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something pure and beautiful. You know, I love that. But I couldn't get up and say, oh, I'm going to tell you about Agnes Martin. But I can enjoy it, maybe even as much as some people could really talk real well about it. The thing of it is, when my good buddy who died, unfortunately, you know, Yurovsky. When Yurovsky said to me one time, he said, I want to write about your work. I said, you're kidding. You know, because he's a real critical guy, and he's with it, you know. He said, yeah, I thought you'd react that way. He said, no, I'm interested in your, will you come over and talk with me? Well, I went over to his place. I said, look, I have nothing to say about the work. You know, I'm interested in all the little pieces coming together, you know, the old idea of, you know, I'm interested in that. I'd like to have a feeling about the painting for me that kind of holds my attention, has something a little mysterious for me. Where it comes from, I don't know, because I start out with no clear idea of what I'm going to do, but it's going to be a man or woman or you know, or a landscape, what else is always going to be. They're all going to be a lot alike, because I like big, whatever, and I have no great big, you know, stuff to say beyond that. And I said, if it doesn't feel to me like it's happening, I just push it away again and again and again. And now, I looked at Jerry's wife's drawing painting, which I think is very exciting. That she did this. It's very, very, reminds me a lot of some of the wonderful and the past drawing and paintings you got from the East or the Far East. You know, in terms of it comes out all of a sudden, this beautiful line. And then I suddenly realized there was a head there. I didn't in the beginning. It looked like very, it was very abstract. Mm-hmm. But it's that baby again that she's got going. And everyone is the same and everyone is different. It's all different in some respect. But there's a link there, of course. Now, Matisse said, and you've read this a long time ago, about the importance of drawing or painting from within going out. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. You know, I didn't do it because I was as intelligent as he was to do it, but I mean, it's just the way it works. I work from the inside out. I don't look at anything. If I get stuck with something, I'm not going to get bored or something to look at to do it. I'm going to work it out on the basis that the whole thing is happening. You know? And whatever's in that painting, it's just little stuff you see around the house. But to me, the shape, you know, if I put a book somewhere to break the movement, it's going around too much that way. I'm thinking of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a way, as being very important.
What do you think about students over the years? Did students change over the years?
Yeah.
You think? Yeah.
Well, sure. There's some change in it. I think that they're more sophisticated about some things, and less sophisticated about things you might think, you know, they would be interested in, like in terms of knowing artists.
Right.
You know, now they may know certain other things that I don't know about, but coming in late, leaving early, all that kind of stuff, which you know, disturbs everybody in the class. Right. Talking, the students, it can be, I don't know, I really enjoyed them. You know, a lot of them I enjoyed, the majority. There's always just one or two that somehow could make your life miserable.
Yeah.
One student came in and said, after the first time I even talked, she said, I don't want to work with you anymore because your ideas are different than mine. And I said, yeah. I said, that's true.
You're going to find that
said,
a lot.
Yeah, well, I said, so what do you want to do? You want to drop class like that? Well, no, she couldn't because of her schedule. I said, okay, you come in here, you work. I'll look at the work and give you your grades. As long as you come to class, put in the time, it's okay with me. That's what I asked the head of the talk. That's a good idea. But all you can do, you can't force a horse to drink the water, as they
right.
say. You know, it's okay. But it didn't make me feel too good if she felt that way so strongly.
Yeah.
But I only talked with her one time for just a few minutes. You know, she's already arrived at that point.
Mm. So do you miss teaching?
Huh?
Do you miss it?
Yeah, I'm in a hole now. You know, I mean, all the people I knew, I had two people came to see me a little bit. But everybody I know is moving somewhere.
Well, as a painter, how would you like to be remembered as a painter?
Just as a painter.
Yeah, I thought
just
so.
As a painter. Yeah.
Just as a painter.
No, you know, I can't see words ever matching closely enough what's done with the paint.
Yeah.
And I don't even get involved in it too far. The classical part I'm saying, well, I'm interested in getting all of the parts to serve. Some people don't care about that. I understand that. That dropped that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. The hell with that.
Right.
But I haven't. I learned that thing, and it's what I hang on to. It's my life raft, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And if I violate what I am in my own seeing for some kind of reason down the road, that, you know, it doesn't make sense. This is what my life has been. Now, for instance, don't use gesture. Why the hell not use gesture? Why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know? What's so sacred about, you know, that you can't use it? Now, that little drawing painting that Jerry's wife did, it's full of gesture. And I like it very, very much. And you know, why not expand? In fact, I think the big mistake that's made there, I think it was about a month ago on television, the People's Channel, they had a lot of people from California, from Venice, California, talking about their work. And there were some well-known names among them. I can't think of them now, but there were a few well-known names. And one of the artists said, I think we made a mistake in keeping everything so wide open as we did. You know, we just was like, hell, anything goes. A piece of toilet paper can be called out. You know, anything goes. There's nothing to measure it against.
Well, this has been great. Anything else you want to add?
What happens is all of a sudden something comes through, pure Rorschach, and it looks interesting to you. So you're trying to take it, and all of a sudden it goes. You know, you keep playing this game, depending a lot on accidental things.
Yeah. I think that's a wonderful way to end. I really do. Well, thank you. Thank you, Milo Russell, for sharing with us and talking with us about your life and as a painter, a traveler, a wanderer, a questioner, a suicidal, all the things that I guess most of us, if we're lucky enough to live long enough, probably experience. And thank you, folks, for listening. We've been talking to Milo Russell today. We hope to see you again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.